This is Audible.
Did Amius Gray mean so much to you?
Everything in the world. I loved him. I would have made him happy. I want to show you something. To show how we felt about one another, Amius and I. I have kept this letter from Amius with me always. Read it.
Elsa, you wonderful child. I have never known anything so beautiful.
And yet I'm afraid. I'm too old for you. A middle-aged, foul-tempered devil. I'm no good apart from my work. The best of me is in that. There, don't say you haven't been warned. But what the hell, my lovely, I'm going to have you all the same. I'd go to the devil for you, and you know it. And I'll paint a picture of you that will make a fat-headed world hold its sides and gasp. I'm crazy about you. I can't sleep. I can't eat.
I am yours forever, Elsa. Yours till death.
Yours till death. And that was 16 years ago. And I'm still alone. Oh, if only you knew. If only you could understand.
But that is exactly what I want to do. To see what happened through your eyes. Mr. Philip Blake is writing me a careful account of everything. So is his brother Meredith. Now, if you...
You'll get nothing from them. Philip was always stupid. Meredith used to trot round after Caroline, though he was quite a dear. But as for the truth, would you like the truth? Would you like me to write it for you, to show you what she was? She killed him. She killed Amius, who wanted to live so much. Hate ought not to be stronger than love, but her hate was. And my hatred for her is... Yes, Monsieur Poirot. I will write down what happened. But it won't be like the other accounts. Who else are you going to ask?
I had thought of talking to the woman who was governess there at the time, a Miss Williams, I believe her name was.
I vaguely remember her. A mousy little creature. The kind who never asks anything out of life because she knows she's never going to get it. She won't be able to tell you anything, Monsieur Poirot.
This little piggy had none.
It's good to have news of little Caroline after all these years. I'm glad she's turned out well. Tell me, is she artistic?
I think not.
That's one thing to be thankful for.
There is something I would like to ask you about her, Miss Williams.
Hmm?
Whenever I have mentioned her name, the response always comes as a vague surprise, as though the person to whom I am speaking has forgotten altogether that there was a child. Now, can you explain that?
You've put your finger on a vital point, Monsieur Poirot. Mr. and Mrs. Crail were so wrapped up in one another that there were times when nobody seemed to notice that little Caroline existed. I don't mean that she was neglected in any way, but for all her care for her daughter, the only thing that really mattered in Mrs. Crail's life was her husband. She existed, one might say, only in him and for him.
You mean that they were more like lovers than like husband and wife?
You could certainly put it that way.
He was devoted to her as she was to him?
They were a devoted couple. But he, of course, was a man.
Oh, you hold no brief for men?
Men have the best of this world. I hope that it will not always be so.
You did not like him, Amius Gray?
I did not like him, nor did I approve of him. If I were his wife, I should have left him. There are things that no woman should put up with.
You liked Mrs. Crail?
I was very fond of Mrs. Crail. Very fond of her and very sorry for her.
And your pupil, Angela Warren?
She was a remarkable girl. One of the most interesting pupils I've ever had. A really good brain. I always hoped that she would accomplish something worthwhile. And she has. You've read her book on the Sahara. She investigated those very interesting tombs in the Fayum. I shall always be proud that I helped to stimulate her mind and encourage her taste for archaeology.
I understand that it was decided to continue her education by sending her away to school. You must have resented that.
Not at all, Monsieur Poirot. I thoroughly concurred with it. Angela was a dear girl, really a very dear girl. Warm-hearted and impulsive. But she was also what I call a difficult girl. That is, she was at a difficult age.
The age when a girl is neither a child nor a woman.
Exactly. One moment Angela would be sensible and mature, quite grown up, in fact. But a minute later she would relapse into being a spoiled child, being rude and losing her temper and playing mischievous tricks. You've heard, no doubt, of the things she did to Mr. Grail.
Like putting slugs in his bed.
Yes. He had a particular aversion for slugs. And there was another thing which really annoyed him. He had a habit of tossing down his drinks in one gulp, and she once put a lot of salt into his glass. The whole thing, of course, acted as an emetic, and he was speechless with fury. But the slugs were the last straw.
And that was why she was sent away to school?
Yes. He said he wasn't going to put up with any more nonsense. Angela was terribly upset, although she'd said more than once that she wanted to go to boarding school. But she chose to make a huge grievance of it, and she would hit out at Mr. Crail whenever it took her fancy to do so. It wasn't really serious, you understand, but it made a kind of undercurrent to everything else that was going on.
Ah, you mean Elsa Greer?
Exactly. Elsa Greer.
And what was your opinion of her?
I had no opinion of her at all. Thoroughly unprincipled young woman.
Mr. Crail's death must have been a terrible shock to her.
Oh, it was. And she herself was entirely to blame for it. I don't go as far as condoning murder, but all the same, Monsieur Poirot, if ever a woman was driven to breaking point, that woman was Caroline Crail. I tell you frankly, there were moments when I would have liked to murder them both myself. She was goaded beyond endurance, and I, for one, do not blame her for what she did.
You were with Mrs. Crail when she found her husband's body, I believe.
Yes. She and I went down from the house together after lunch. Angela had left her pullover on the beach after bathing, or else in the boat. She was always very careless about her things. I parted from Mrs. Crail at the door of the Battery Garden, but she called me back almost at once. I believe Mr. Crail had been dead over an hour. He was sprawled on the bench near his easel.
And how did Mrs. Crail seem? Was she terribly upset?
What exactly do you mean by that, Monsieur Poirot?
I am asking you what your impressions were at the time, Miss Williams.
Oh, I see. She seemed quite dazed. She sent me off to telephone for the doctor. After all, one couldn't be absolutely sure he was dead. Might have been a cataleptic seizure.
So, you went and telephoned?
I'd gone halfway up the path when I met Mr. Meredith Blake. I entrusted my errand to him and returned to Mrs. Crail. Hmm. I thought, you see, she might have collapsed.
And had she?
Mrs. Crail was quite in command of herself. She was very different from Miss Greer, who made a very hysterical scene.
Ah, what kind of scene?
She tried to attack Mrs. Crail.
You killed him! You poisoned him! You crazy, jealous bitch! You wanted to keep him all to yourself!
And Mrs. Crail, how did she react to that?
I cannot tell you what she felt or thought at that moment.
No, but how did she seem?
Stunned and frightened, I think. But that is natural enough.
Natural enough. Perhaps. What view did she adopt officially as to her husband's death?
Suicide. She said very definitely from the first that it must be suicide.
Did you believe that, Miss Williams?
No, I did not. But please understand, Monsieur Poirot, that my sympathies were entirely with Mrs. Crail.
You would have liked to see her acquitted?
Most certainly I would. Whatever she may have done, hers was not the blame.
So you can sympathise very well with her daughter's feelings about her mother?
Of course I can.
Would you have any objection to writing out a detailed account of the tragedy?
For her daughter to read?
Yes. Oh, I dare say it would have been preferable if the truth had been kept from her.
No. It is always better to face the truth. Once she knows about it, she'll be able to put it behind her and go on living her own life.
Ah, but you see, mademoiselle, there is more to it than that. She not only wants to know what happened, she wants her mother to be proved innocent.
Poor child.
Is that what you think?
To wish to find her mother innocent is a natural hope.
You do not consider that there is even a possibility that Mrs. Crail was innocent?
Monsieur Poirot, what is the point of going against the facts?
But can you really be so certain?
Yes, Monsieur Poirot. It doesn't matter my saying this now, so long afterwards. You see, I happen to know that Caroline Crail was guilty.
But how? Tell me.
No, I cannot tell you, but I will write it.
Ah, very well, mademoiselle. I shall await your account with the greatest interest.
Is it your intention to talk to Angela Warren?
She is to deliver a lecture to the Royal Geographical Society in 3 days' time. I hope she will agree to talk to me.
She is a brave woman. But then she always was. Ever since that dreadful accident which left her half blind. Please remember me to her.
The last of my little pigs. But this time, the rhyme is not appropriate. I am sure that Angela Warren would not have cried wee, wee, wee all the way home.
Of course, Carla's right to try and prove her mother was innocent. Caroline didn't do it. I've always known that.
You surprise me very much, Mademoiselle Warren. Everybody else I have spoken to...
They didn't know her as I did. I don't care about the circumstantial evidence. I just know quite simply and definitely that my sister couldn't have killed anyone.
Can one say that with certainty of any human creature?
In most cases, probably not. But as far as Caroline was concerned, there were special reasons. Reasons which I have a better chance of appreciating than anyone else could. You see the scar on my face? I know you've been politely trying not to notice it, but take a good look at it. Monsieur Poirot, I have lost the sight of my right eye. It was Caroline's doing. And that is why I'm certain. I know that she didn't do the murder.
It would be a convincing argument to the contrary for many people.
It was used in that way at the trial, I believe, as evidence that Caroline had a violent and ungovernable temper. Because she had injured me as a baby, the prosecution urged that she would be equally capable of poisoning an unfaithful husband.
Well, I at least appreciate the difference, mademoiselle. A sudden fit of ungovernable rage does not lead you first to steal a poison and then use it deliberately the following day.
That's not what I mean at all.
No?
Suppose that you are a person normally affectionate and basically kind, but that you are also liable to intense jealousy. And suppose that at a time in your life when self-control is most difficult, in a fit of blind rage, you come near to committing what is in effect murder. Think of the horror that would seize on you once that fit of rage was over.
I understand.
Caroline was haunted, continually haunted by the fact that she had injured me. It coloured everything she did. Nothing was too good for me. In her eyes, I must always come first. Half the quarrels she had with Amius were on my account. I was inclined to be jealous of him and played all kinds of tricks on him. I pinched cat stuff to put in his drink and once put a hedgehog in his bed. But Caroline was always on my side and was always watching herself, always on guard that something of that kind might happen again.
And yet she was heard on several occasions threatening to kill Amius Grey.
That's just it. She felt that if she were violent enough in speech, she wouldn't be violent in action. It was her way of giving it a natural outlet. She and Amius used to have the most fantastic quarrels.
Like cat and dog, it was said.
What nobody appreciated was that they enjoyed quarrelling. Living that way with continual rows and making up was their idea of fun. Do you see what I mean?
I see perfectly. May I ask you, mademoiselle, what were your own feelings at the time?
It was like a terrible nightmare. Caroline was arrested about 3 days after the murder. But her only concern was for me. She wanted me kept right away from it all. She got Miss Williams to take me away to relations almost at once. The police had no objections. And when it was decided that my evidence would not be needed, arrangements were made for me to go to school abroad.
And were you abroad when the verdict was given?
They wouldn't let me go near her. Caroline wouldn't allow it. I never saw her again.
Tell me, mademoiselle, what do you think really happened?
I suppose that, as Caroline said, Amius must have committed suicide.
What? Is that likely, from what you know of his character?
Very unlikely. But what other explanation is there?
You cannot see one.
You mean one of the other people killed him? That it was cold-blooded murder?
It is a possibility that we should consider. Who of those intimately concerned would have wanted to get rid of Amius Grayle? Elsa Greer, Meredith Blake, Philip Blake? Yes, Miss Warren? You have something to say about Philip Blake?
Do you know the way things suddenly come back to you? After years, perhaps. Things that didn't mean anything at the time, perhaps because you were too young. And then they suddenly fall into place.
I understand what you mean, mademoiselle.
Some time ago, I was staying at an hotel. As I walked along a corridor, one of the bedroom doors opened and a woman I knew came out. It was not her bedroom, and she registered the fact plainly on her face when she saw me. And then I knew the meaning of the expression I had once seen on Caroline's face at Alderbury, when she came out of Philip Blake's room one night.
But that is quite astonishing. From Philip Blake himself, I got the impression that he disliked your sister and had always done so.
I can't explain it, but there it is.
I felt at the time that his animosity did not altogether ring true. Meredith Blake told me that his brother did not go and see Amias and Caroline for nearly a year after they were married. Could it have been because he was jealous?
I can't tell you. I don't understand it. You see, I've no experience in love affairs. They haven't come my way. I thought it might just have some bearing on what happened.
It certainly puts things in a very different light. But will it help to prove your sister's innocence?
I am certain that she didn't do it, Monsieur Poirot.
How can you be so sure?
After the verdict, she wrote me a letter. I have never shown it to anyone. But I think I would like you to read it. It may help you understand the kind of person she was.
And have you found out the truth about what happened?
That would be a little too much to hope for at this stage, Mademoiselle Carla.
So what have you found?
I have received the 5 statements about the murder. Mr. Caleb Jonathan prophesied that I would find 5 different accounts of 5 different murders. And yet, although the angle of each is different, everyone is agreed on the main facts.
You mean they all agree that my mother killed my father? Doesn't anyone think she was innocent?
But it is the facts which interest me, mademoiselle. Are they necessarily what everyone believes them to have been? Each of the accounts contains something which does not quite fit into the picture.
What kind of things?
The first concerns the morning of the murder. It is Meredith Blake's account of how he came to find that the Cognin was missing.
I had slept very badly. After a long, wakeful period, I fell into a heavy sleep about 6 a.m. and woke up at about 9:30. I thought I heard movements in the laboratory. I went down and I found the window sash raised a little way. It had probably been left from the day before, and the sound I heard had almost certainly been a cat. It was then that I noticed that the Cognin jar was nearly empty.
A cat? Very curious, don't you think?
I don't see what it's got to do with anything.
It interests me. But let us see what Philip Blake has to say about that morning. He also slept late.
By the time I came down, the dining room was empty. I went to see if I could find anybody outside and encountered Miss Williams running about looking for Angela. I went back into the hall. I could hear Caroline and Amias having a great set to in the library.
You and your women! I'd like to kill you! Someday I will kill you!
Now it seems that Elsa Greer also overheard this conversation, but a rather different one.
Understand this, Caroline. Nothing's going to stop me.
Do as you please. I've warned you.
What's that supposed to mean?
You're mine, and I don't mean to let you go. Sooner than let you go to that girl, I'll kill you.
And then the phone rang in the hall. It was Meredith Blake. He told his brother about the missing Cognin. They agreed to meet at the landing stage, and they walked up towards the house, discussing what they should do.
As we came up to the Battery Garden, we could hear Caroline and Amias having a disagreement of some kind. I think that Caroline was pleading with him not to send Angela off to boarding school.
It's very hard on the girl. Can't you see that?
Amias, however, was adamant, shouting out irritably that it was all settled. He'd see to her packing. Elsa came down the path at that moment, and as Amias clearly wanted to get on with the sitting, I went on up the path and sat myself on a bench overlooking the Battery, watching Elsa as she stood posing for Amias.
Can't you keep still, damn it? Must you wave your arms about like that?
I've been holding this pose for simply ages. I'm stiff.
You're not nearly as stiff as I am. It must be muscular rheumatism.
You poor old man. Don't tell me I'm taking on a creaking invalid.
But what about the actual poisoning? What do they have to say about that?
Elsa Greer says that your mother poured the bottle of beer into your father's glass and stood there watching him drink it.
Amius drank it down the way he always drank beer, pouring it down his throat in one draught.
Everything tastes foul today. At any rate, it was cold.
And even then, when he said that, no suspicion entered my head. I just laughed and said liver. It never occurred to me that there was something wrong with the beer. If I'd known, if I'd realised, perhaps the doctor would have saved him. It's no good thinking of that now.
But what difference does any of this make? It doesn't change anything.
You do not see.
The facts are still exactly the same. What about Miss Williams? She wasn't as closely involved as the others. Didn't she notice anything?
In many ways, her account is the most interesting of all. For example, she tells of a violent quarrel between your father and Angela on the night before the murder.
I've no doubt that Angela sensed the tension in the air and that it reacted on her as much as anyone else. It all ended with her flinging a paperweight at Mr. Crail and dashing out of the room.
A paperweight?
Curious, is it not?
On the morning of the murder, I went into Angela's room before going down to breakfast, but she was already up and out. I picked up a torn skirt which she'd left lying on the floor and took it down with me for her to mend. She had already gone out, and I went in search of her. Her bathing dress was missing, and accordingly I went down to the beach. There was no sign of her, so I conceived it possible that she'd gone over to Handcross Manor. I did not find her there, and I eventually returned. Angela was in the conservatory by the refrigerator and was taking out a bottle of beer. Mrs. Crail came up from the battery to get a drink for her husband.
Amius says he wants one that's cold.
It is difficult to know whether I should have suspected anything from Mrs. Crail's manner, but I must admit that at that moment I was intent not on her, but on Angela. I am glad to say that she looked red and rather guilty.
Miss Williams is certain that my mother did it, isn't she?
I'm afraid that she is, and she believes that she has positive proof.
What kind of positive proof?
Ah, you must forgive me, mademoiselle, but for the moment I wish to keep that to myself. I need to give it some thought.
So all we're left with is Aunt Angela.
And she, unfortunately, has only the most indistinct memories of that time.
I've just a vague recollection of summer days and isolated incidents. But I couldn't say for certain what summer they happened, even.
Does she give any reason at all why she's so sure my mother didn't do it?
Yes, she does. There is a letter which your mother wrote to her from prison. Angela considers it to be a proof of her innocence.
Can I see the letter?
I shall ask her to bring it to a little reunion I'm planning.
A reunion?
I propose to hold a little gathering at Handcross Manor of all those who were at Alderbury at the time of the murder. I have written to Mr. Meredith Blake.
May I come?
Of course, mademoiselle. And I have asked Mr. Blake to hang on the wall Amius Crail's portrait of Elsa Greer. It seemed appropriate.
So that my father can be there in spirit?
Exactly. Oh, there is one surprising thing I learned from Elsa Greer's account.
What's that?
After the trial, Meredith Blake asked her to marry him.
Oh.
Strange, is it not?
But nothing has changed. I feel like a schoolgirl again.
I'm so very proud of you, my dear, to think that a pupil of mine...
You must be Miss Williams.
And you are Carla. What a very happy occasion this would be if it were not for the macabre circumstances.
Couldn't agree more. What the devil is all this, Poirot?
Let us call it an excursion into the past, an excursion where we shall finally lay the ghosts. For who is to say that Amius and Caroline Crail are not here, listening and waiting?
Your last witness is here, Monsieur Poirot. Lady Dittisham.
I hope I have not kept you waiting, Monsieur Poirot.
It was very good of you to come, madame.
I wouldn't have known you, Angela. How long is it?
16 years.
Yes, it is 16 years since the events of which we are to speak. 16 years. A long time for the ashes to settle on a murder.
I hope you're not going to subject us to a flowery speech, Poirot. If we must go into it all again, let's get it over as quickly and painlessly as possible. We all know what happened, so why don't we skip the preamble?
Very well, Mr. Blake. You say we all know what happened, but are the facts as generally accepted really correct? For example, you have stated that you hated Caroline Crail, but I have reason to believe that you were violently attracted to her.
What the devil do you mean by that?
She was observed coming out of your room at Alderbury at a somewhat compromising hour.
Who told you that?
Does not matter who told me.
It makes no difference to anything. Yes, I'd always been in love with Caroline, but she never took the least notice of me. Then when Amos lost his head over Elsa Greer...
Yes, Mr. Blake?
Caroline was in a mood when a woman can very easily be won. She agreed to come to my room, and then she told me it was no good. She was Amos Crail's, for better or worse, and she left me. Do you wonder that I never forgave her?
And your brother, Mr. Meredith Blake, has been cast as Caroline Crail's devoted friend, but in fact that devotion had worn itself thin by the time of the murder. It was Elsa Greer who was occupying his thoughts.
But surely this has nothing to do with the issue?
Has it not? Sadly, there are many things everyone failed to see at the time of the trial, and the first of these was that at no time did Caroline Crail protest her innocence.
Why should she? She didn't have a leg to stand on.
There are certain facts, however, that are beyond dispute. I do not think there is any doubt that it was Mrs. Crail who took the quinine from the laboratory. You have all confirmed Elsa Greer's revelation of the fact that she and Amos Crail were contemplating marriage, and Mrs. Crail's deep distress.
She behaved with great dignity. I have never seen anything like the look of scorn Mrs. Crail gave her husband.
So, now we come to the morning of the fatal day. There is a scene between husband and wife in the library. Caroline is overheard saying, "You and your women," in a bitter voice, and finally going on to say, "Someday I'll kill you."
I distinctly heard her say that. I was in the hall.
So far, there is nothing that seems psychologically incorrect. Everyone has behaved much as they might be expected to behave, but now we come to something that is incongruous. Meredith Blake discovers the loss of the poison. He meets his brother at the landing stage, and they come up past the Battery Garden where Caroline Crail is having a discussion with her husband about Angela's going to school. That is correct?
Yes, that's so, but what's all about it?
Does it not strike you as strange that 20 minutes after a terrific row when she has threatened to kill him, Mrs. Crail and her husband should be having a trivial domestic argument concerning Angela? According to Meredith Blake, the words he overheard Crail say were, "I'll see to her packing." That is right?
It was something like that, yes.
Yes, Amos said something about packing, and Caroline said something about it being very hard on the girl. Anyway, what does it matter? We all knew that Angela was off to school in a day or two.
But why should Amos Crail pack for the girl? It is absurd. There was Mrs. Crail, there was Miss Williams, there was a housemaid.
Well, what does it matter? It has nothing to do with the crime.
You think not? For me, it was the first point that struck me as suggestive, and it is immediately followed by another. Mrs. Crail, a desperate woman who is certainly contemplating either suicide or murder, now offers, in the most amicable manner, to bring her husband down some iced beer.
But surely, if she was going to kill him, that's just what she would do. Dissimulate.
You think so? Very well. Caroline Crail goes up to the house, fetches a bottle from the conservatory and takes it down to her husband. He drinks it down, and what does he say?
Everything tastes foul today.
But curious, is it not? And now we come to something which was not brought to the attention of the authorities at the time. After lunch, Mrs. Crail finds her husband dead. She sends Miss Williams off for a doctor, but Miss Williams meets Meredith Blake and asks him to telephone. She returns to the Battery Garden and... Tell us what you saw, Miss Williams.
You're sure you really wish me to do this?
Quite sure, Miss Williams.
Very well. I saw Mrs. Crail wiping the beer bottle clean with her handkerchief, and then she pressed the fingers of her dead husband onto the bottle.
You actually saw her do
that? I don't believe it.
But that settles it. That settles it once and for all.
Yes, Mr. Blake. It was the one thing which made me see that Caroline Crail was not guilty, could not possibly be guilty.
But, my
what
dear...
What does Miss Williams see? Mrs. Crail wiping fingerprints from the bottle. What Mrs. Crail did not know was that the quinine was not in the bottle. The police found no trace of it. The poison was in the glass.
Then why...
Yes, why? Why did Caroline Crail try so desperately to establish the theory of suicide? The answer is quite simple. Because she knew who had poisoned him, and she was willing to do anything, endure anything, rather than let that person be suspected. Oh, Miss Warren, I requested that you bring your sister's letter. Do you have it?
Yes, I do.
I should like you to read it aloud to us.
No.
Surely.
I realize perfectly well what you are suggesting. That I killed Amias Crail and that my sister knew it. I deny that allegation utterly.
Nevertheless...
That letter was meant for my eyes only.
It was written by my mother. I have a right to speak for her. I want that letter read.
Very well, Carla. Since you ask it, I cannot very well refuse. My darling little Angela, you will hear bad news and you will grieve. But what I want to impress upon you is that it is all right. I have never told you lies, and I don't now, when I say that I am actually happy, that I feel a peace that I have never known before. It's all right, darling. It's all right. Don't look back and regret and grieve for me. Go on with your life and succeed. You can, I know. I've told you I'm happy. One has to pay one's debts. It's lovely to feel so peaceful.
You will notice one striking omission. Nowhere is there any protestation of innocence.
There was no need for it.
Yes, Miss Warren. Caroline Crail had no need to tell her sister that she was innocent. She thought that her sister knew that fact only too well.
I don't see what you're driving at.
All Caroline Crail was concerned about was to prevent any possibility of a confession from Angela. Her sister must be encouraged to live her life, to be happy and successful. And, so that the burden may not be too great, she ends on that very significant phrase, one must pay one's debts.
What debts? What did she mean by that?
The burden that Caroline Crail had carried for so many years, ever since in a fit of uncontrolled adolescent rage she hurled a paperweight at her baby sister and scarred her for life.
And Angela threw a paperweight at Amias Crail the night before his
death. And she shouted that she wished he was dead. And when Caroline Crail went to get the bottle of beer on that last day, she saw Angela standing by the refrigerator with a guilty expression on her face. And after Amias's death...
You mean she thought Angela had done it?
If one accepts that assumption as true, everything else falls into place.
But if I'd done it, I wouldn't have kept silent. I'd never have let Caroline suffer for what I'd done.
Did you put anything in that bottle?
Of course I didn't.
According to his account, Meredith Blake heard sounds coming from his laboratory on the morning of the crime.
Yes. It was a cat.
You're certain?
The window was open. And there was a smell of cats about the place.
A smell of cats. And that morning Angela went bathing early, but Miss Williams could not find her on the beach. I suggest that she swam across here, got through the window, and took something from the shelf.
But it can't have been that morning. At least
I... Ah, you have remembered. You told me, did you not, that to play a joke on Amias Crail you once stole what you called cat stuff.
Valerian, of course. That was what I smelt.
And Miss Warren stole valerian to put in Amias Crail's beer.
But I never associated it with that day. I remember taking it. I remember going to the fridge and getting a bottle of beer. Caroline came in just as I was unscrewing the bottle. You mean to say that she thought it was me? But I didn't kill him. If I thought that she believed that, I would have spoken out. Surely you don't think that I murdered him?
Of course not. Nobody but a fool would think that.
Hercule Poirot is not a fool, Miss Williams. I know very well who killed Amias Crail. There is always a danger of accepting facts as proved which are really nothing of the kind. Let us take the situation at Alderbury. Two women and one man. We have taken it for granted that Amias Crail proposed to leave his wife for the other woman, but I suggest to you now that he never intended to do anything of the kind.
Oh, but damn it, old man, we all heard him say so.
He may have said so, but many women had obsessed him while they lasted. Elsa Greer was not a woman. She was a young girl, and in love she was frighteningly single-minded. Because she herself had a deep and overwhelming passion for Amias Crail, she assumed that he had the same for her. She assumed, without asking him, that he was going to leave his wife.
But why should he let her go on believing that?
It is quite simple. He wanted to finish that picture. To Amias Crail, you see, everything is simple. He is painting a picture, slightly encumbered by what he sees as a couple of jealous, neurotic women, but neither of them is going to be allowed to interfere with what to him is the most important thing in life.
You mean that he never intended to leave Caroline at all?
Oh, perhaps in the first flash of his feelings he did talk of leaving her, but I believe that his wife was the only person he cared about at all, and I think that after that scene when Elsa proclaimed to the world at large that they were going to get married, She became seriously worried. The following morning, the morning of his death, he told Caroline that once he had finished the picture, he would never see Elsa Greer again.
But I distinctly heard her say, "You and your women, someday I'll kill you."
Exactly. Because she was revolted by his callousness and his cruelty to the girl. But what he did not know was that Elsa Greer had been just outside the library window and had heard every word. Imagine the shock it must have been to her to hear the truth so brutally spoken. Meredith Blake, on that afternoon when you showed your guests around your laboratory, you have stated that Caroline Crail was the last to leave.
Yes, that is correct.
And you had your back to her?
Yes.
What were you doing?
I was talking to Elsa.
Which means that she could see over your shoulder Caroline taking the poison. She was the only person who could do so. She said nothing, but she remembered it as she stood outside the library listening to Amias saying that he would get rid of her. When he came out and asked her to pose for him, she made the excuse of wanting to get a pullover and went up to Caroline's room to look for that poison.
But I thought you said that Caroline's were the only prints found on the bottle she'd put the poison in.
Elsa Greer drew off the fluid into a pipette, which was later found crushed on the gravel path. She went down to the Battery Garden and squeezed it into a glass of beer which she poured out for him, and no doubt he tossed it back in his usual way. She went back to the house, this time genuinely to fetch a pullover, and Caroline Crail took the opportunity to tackle him about Elsa.
It's very hard on the girl, can't you see that? I don't give a damn how foul Elsa's been to me. You can't treat her like this. You're being unbelievably cruel. The poor creature's in love with you.
I don't give a damn. It's got nothing to do with you. It's all settled. I'll send the girl packing. Now leave me alone and let me get on with the picture.
Of course. I remembered it all wrong. I thought he was talking about Angela.
Elsa returns, cool and smiling, and takes up the pose once more. Already she has counted upon Caroline being suspected and the scent bottle with the traces of quinine being found in her room. But now, Caroline plays into her hands completely.
She goes off to get a bottle of iced beer for Amias Crail.
And he drinks it down and says, "Everything tastes foul today." Do you not see how significant that remark is? Everything tastes foul.
Because there had been something before which had tasted wrong.
Exactly. And, Monsieur Philippe, what was it that you said about Amias Crail?
That he was staggering a little as if he'd been drinking.
It was the first sign of the conine working.
Which confirms that it had already been administered to him some time before Caroline Crail brought him the bottle of iced beer.
And Elsa just sat there posing. I saw her. She waved to me.
And Amias Crail, a man who detested illness and refused to give in to it, painted doggedly on till his limbs failed and his speech thickened and he sprawled there on the bench, helpless, but his mind still clear.
But did he know, do you think? Did my father realize that he'd been poisoned?
Ah, we cannot be certain. But his hand and eye were faithful to the end. Look at that picture over there. The picture of Elsa Greer. I should have realized at once when I saw it for the first time, for it is very remarkable. It is the portrait of a murderess painted by her victim. The picture of a girl watching her lover die.
Oh, dear.
Take them out of here, Meredith. Leave me alone with Monsieur Poirot.
If that is what you wish, we will wait in the sitting room.
So, what do you expect me to do, Monsieur Poirot? Confess? Because I shall do nothing of the kind. But what we say here, you and I, does not matter, because it is only a question of your word against mine.
Exactly.
I want to know, what do you propose to do about me?
I shall lay my conclusions before the proper authorities. If they consider there is the possibility of making out a case against you, they may act.
A case against me? Where is your evidence?
Oh, I know. There are only inferences, not facts. Moreover, Lady Ditchum, they will not be able to proceed against anyone in your position unless there is ample justification.
I shouldn't care. If I was standing in the dock, fighting for my life, there might be something in that. I might enjoy it.
Your husband would not.
Do you think I care in the least what my husband would feel?
No, I do not. I do not think you have ever in your life cared about what any other person would feel. If you had, you might be happier.
You almost sound as if you were sorry for me.
I am sorry for you, my child, because you have so much to learn.
What have I to learn?
All the grown-up emotions. Pity, sympathy, understanding. The only things you know, have ever known, are love and hate.
I saw Caroline take the conine. I knew she intended to kill herself. That would have simplified things. And then, the next morning, I heard Amius tell her that he really didn't care a button about me. That once the picture was finished, he'd send me packing. And do you know what was the worst of all?
She was sorry for you.
Can you understand what that did to me? It wasn't difficult to find the stuff in her room. I gave it to him, and I sat there, watching him die. I've never felt so alive, so exultant, so full of power.
And then?
What I didn't realize was that I was killing myself, not him. Afterwards, at the trial, I saw her caught in a trap. I should have enjoyed that, but I felt nothing. And she'd somehow escaped from it all. She was in a world of her own. She and Amius both escaped. They went somewhere where I couldn't get at them. But they didn't die. I died. I died, Monsieur Poirot.
Is there anything you can do to clear my mother's name?
I shall do everything I can to persuade the authorities to grant her a posthumous free pardon.
Oh, I can't tell you how grateful I am, Monsieur Poirot. I knew you were the only person who could do it.
Oh, c'est très gentil. Now you can get married without fear, mademoiselle.
I shall insist that you come to our wedding. You will come, won't you?
It will be an honour. Do you know when it will be?
In 6 months' time, I hope.
Excellent. That will give me time to take a little vacance, a holiday, where I shall leave all thought of crimes and murders far behind me. An excursion by steamer up the Nile.
In Agatha Christie's Five Little Pigs, dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Meredith Blake, Graham Crowden, Philip Blake, Derek Waring, Miss Williams, Carmel McSharry, Angela, Charlotte Attenborough, Elsa Greer, Susie Aitchison. Caroline Crail, Gemma Churchill, Amius Crail, John Hartley, Carla Le Marchand, Claire Hayhoe. Sir Montague de Pleach, John Woodnut, and Caleb Jonathan, David Kossoff. The director was Enid Williams.